he's in trouble. Which one is that?
Ruru, the devil.
Rugaru.
The camera.
He has no regrets. No regrets. None. He's like, try me. I'm going to get it eventually.
He has already had to take all the breakable ornaments off.
Yeah, that is probably a wise.
The only thing on there are felt and wood.
Not breakable items.
No.
Oh, that's hysterical. But yeah, long story short, we started talking about Jason Bateman and Paul Rudd. And I was like, those are my dudes right there.
Well, and Jason Bateman, I mean, he goes way back. He was on Little House on the Prairie a couple of times.
Really? I used to watch that when I was a kid. I was a very odd kid. I'm a very odd person to begin with, but I was a very odd child. And I used to watch, like, I would come home from school with my grandma and we'd watch like that, or Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman. That was a banger. Loved that one. There was this other, I was very into like Pioneer times back then. There was this other one where this chick was a school teacher. And of course I'm blanking on the name. But then she went on ER, and also as a toddler, loved me some ER. I was a pretty, pretty weird kid.
Well, in the late 70s, when Little House was on,
lovely.
We all had to dress like Holly Hobby dolls. Like, we all wore prairie dresses for some reason. That's I don't know why. It was the thing. It was a cultural moment that we all had to go through together.
It was a movement that you all needed to hold hands through and get through it.
And then we went to modern cowboys. So like John Travolta was in a movie where he dressed like in denim and like.
Interesting.
The 70s were very weird.
Well, John Travolta, we were talking about him last night because he's in that commercial where he's like Santa Claus and Samuel L. Jackson calls him. I don't know if you've seen that commercial, but it's a very odd, it's a weird thing. My mom was like, what happened to him? And I was like, Scientology, girl, that's what happened to him.
Yeah.
John Travolta, just.
He was never allowed to be himself.
No. Do you know what I mean? And you know, I really just think too, like, I mean, poor Scientology. Like, I mean, not poor Scientology. Fuck Scientology.
No.
Poor John Travolta. And I really think so. I've watched a lot. We know I have an obsession with Scientology. I just the whole cult thing in general really gets my psychology brain. And I've watched enough stuff about him, especially that like apparently they do these things where you go in a room and they like fuck with you until you confess like your deepest, darkest secrets.
Oh yeah, you can't get clear.
No, and they especially do this with like, they do this with everybody, but they like especially do this with celebrities, basically as like blackmail.
Yeah. So
what I have come to the conclusion in my detectiveness is that he probably said like he's like bisexual or gay or like whatever. And although I do feel like he loved Kelly Preston, like a lot.
Oh, yeah.
The most adorable thing, which I'm like, why, how are you in Scientology? Cause that didn't add up. But I think they like had something over him that he thought was going to like ruin his career. But instead they like ruined his career for a hot second anyway, because he like disappeared.
Yeah.
I feel bad. Welcome Back Kotter and Saturday Night Fever. He like disappeared. And then there was Grease, and then it was like weird. I don't know. Poor guy.
Anyway, I know.
I digress.
Well, on HBO Max, I saw a commercial. They're going to do Heaven's Gate.
Ooh. That's one I've actually thought I need to learn more about because I don't.
And they're still active. They're still having people.
I know. That's creepy. I just feel like. That's how I feel about that. What is it? The LDS too? Mm-hmm. Like all of those. I mean, it's a subset of Mormon. We can't lump all Mormons into that situation.
No, not at all. No.
It's like a subset, but it's very weird. Cause I'm like, how do you not have the internet? Like, how is this not a thing that you just happen to see? I don't know. It's very crazy. I'm like, come on, y'all. I used to watch this show called Escaping Polygamy, and it was about people that escaped the LDS.
Aww.
And
poor people.
Three sisters, two of them were full sisters, and then one was like a sister wife's daughter. But they share, obviously they all shared a dad. But so it's three sisters, and they like helped like other people get out of the LDS. And it was like all intense. They had two bodyguards, people with guns, like that would go with them, because apparently the LDS, different LDS communities, like would cut a bitch if you came up into their situation. It was intense. It came on after Leah Remini's show.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I don't know if she does that show anymore.
I don't think it's on anymore.
I don't know. I loved that show, though. That was such a good show.
I felt like, yeah. But anyway, cult. We could talk about cults all day.
I could talk about cults till I died, till my face turned blue when I couldn't breathe anymore. Like, that, I am fascinated. It is fascinating, just the whole thing. I also, like, this is... One more thing and then we're done. We're done with cults because I could talk about them forever. But but I am obsessed with like the person that is the leader and how they become a leader, because like I don't know anyone that thinks I'm that fascinating to follow me to the ends of like not eating, sleeping when I tell you to sleep, like doing certain things. Like, part of me is like, I wish I had that ability to, like...
Or, like, you can't have sexual relations with your spouse.
Yeah, that was the LDS guy. He was like, I'm in jail, so none of y'all getting any.
Right.
Bye, Felicia, kind of thing. Which I feel like was so rude. Like, the one thing they have maybe there is, like...
Each other.
But also, I mean, some of those women, they were probably... blessing the high holy one that he said that, because some of them people is nasty. Anyway, could talk about that forever. Okay, well, before we grew, let's get into this. So for background for everyone listening, because, you know, y'all aren't in our text messages, but I texted Ashley yesterday, and I was like, this story took a weird turn for me.
So, that means it's good, right?
So it went from like the ghost stories and like kind of like that kind of stuff that I had heard. And I wanted to do background on the place. It's a place. It's a physical property. And I wanted to do background on it because like when I did the Bourbon Orleans, I found out a lot of like shit that I didn't know and like, you know, why it was haunted and different stuff and like all of that kind of thing. So it was like kind of like that. I was interested. I'd heard about it. You know what it is. Everyone knows what this place is. And I'm like, okay, so what's the 411? What's the background? Let's like get into it. Then it like, I think because of our writing backgrounds, like sometimes we get in our own way and have to correct something
that's
wrong.
Right. Yeah.
So my like journalistic sense, spidey senses, like went off on a couple of things because I Google. I'm a Googler. I want to know like how old people were, when they died, like when they were born, what they did, where they lived, who their kids were. Like I'm a weirdo. I need to know everything about a person's life, especially like famous people. And then when I was giving it a Goog, some things didn't add up. And I was like,
okay.
You know, then I was like, wait a second, what happened? Mm-hmm. What's going on here? So I'm going to start with the like ghosty part and then I'm going to correct it and give y'all the real lowdown. So we're going to talk spirits, but then I'm going to give you a little history lesson of what I found as well. So now that I've said all that, today's story is about Lafitte's Blacksmith Shop.
Ooh, yeah. Love that place.
Exactly. I love that place. It's great. My favorite is that they still claim that it doesn't have any electricity, but there's daiquiri things behind the bar. That's my favorite part of it, if we're being quite honest.
Like you walk in and it's so dark because there's only candles.
pitch black dark, even in the middle of the day. You're like, yes. You can't see.
Cannot
see anything. And they're like, oh, we don't have electricity only in part of the building, which is like the off, like in the back, they have it like in the back or whatever. And I get it. You're trying to do the authenticity thing. Like, cool. I get it. But when you have daiquiri machines behind the bar that require electricity, like, can we turn a light on here? Can we get some recessed lighting or something? Like, what's happening? Yeah. It's a stop. It's a thing you gotta go. You gotta go. It's just a thing. If you come to New Orleans, like, you gotta go. So, what is it on? Bourbon and St. Peter's? Down in there somewhere. Bourbon and St. Peter's, but it's like not the bourbon part. Like, it's not the like.
It's not rowdy.
It's like not the gross part. Even locals still go there, even though they've kind of like, I'm not gonna lie, I don't like what they've done to the outside of the building. They tried to like make it, they've got like the fake, like it's like the building's rotting away and like the brick is exposed, but it's not real brick. It's just a very weird situation. Anyway, anywho. So I was interested because I have heard a lot of stuff. Jean Lafitte came up in our first episode with Madame LaLaurie because of like the slave trade and all of that kind of shenanigans. So I kind of wanted to like look into the background. So it's apparently one of the oldest buildings in the French Quarter.
Which is saying something, because
it survived both great fires of New Orleans.
Wow.
So that's intense, because those things wiped out like a big part
of everything.
So, and it's supposedly, according to the bar's website, it's the oldest working bar in the country. Now, put an asterisk in that. We're putting an asterisk in that. Okay. Everyone just stick a pin in it. The building itself is said to have been built between 1722 and 1732, which like seems like a really big gap to me, but we're going with it. There's also further like recording of the building, like this at the space having there's like recorded like a realty transfer by Don Andres Almonester. And we know him because he is the father of our badass Baroness, the Baroness Pontalba.
It always comes back to her.
Always comes back to her because she's a fucking rock star.
Yeah.
So the bar's website also claims the space was used by Jean and Pierre Lafitte between 1772 and 1791 as a New Orleans base for their Barataria smuggling operation. Put a pin in that as well.
Got it.
They say that this legend is based off of the fact that the property was owned by the family of Simon de Roche, a.k.a. Castillon.
Oh.
I don't know. I didn't look that up. I didn't look that up. I don't know what that means. But apparently he, so Simon de Roche and the privateer captain René Belouche, who commanded a ship named Spy, the ship's name was Spy, in Lafitte Baratarian fleet. So that's what they claim. They claim that it had to have something to do with that because it was the Lafitte brothers, like people or whatever. And then when we're talking about, okay, so everyone knows that Lafitte's is haunted.
Yes.
So I found the best breakdown of all of it from ghostcitytours.com, and they're like one of the people that do the bar crawl haunted history tour, which always stops at Lafitte's, obviously, and like all of that kind of stuff. So I am giving them full credit because I thought they just had the best kind of like breakdown of each of them. So basically it says that the ghost of Jean Lafitte himself is attached to this building. This is all according to Ghost City Tours and the legends that like the different tales that are around it. So It also says that he appears as a full-bodied apparition, which is, like, not a thing that happens all the time, because literally that means they look like a person, like, standing in front of you.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen all the time. It's usually, like, mist, or, like, they say, like, Ghost City says, like, a shadow person, like, a figure, but it's not ever, like, you don't see the person ever. Which from has me calling bullshit, but that's just me. apparently he is a full-bodied apparition dressed in sailor's gear. Put a pin in that as well.
Okay.
It says the ghost of Jean Lafitte has never interacted with anyone. He's never said a word to anyone. He simply stands in the dark corner staring at people until he is noticed, at which time his ghost disappears into the shadows. It's so dark in there. Are we sure it's not just a creepy local that's standing in the corner?
It could be.
I mean, because someone dressed
like Randy, get out of here.
God damn it, Phil. We told you to stop. We told you to stop scaring the customer.
Lurking in the back.
So once he gets noticed, his ghost disappears. And they say that it's a fairly common occurrence at Lafitte's blacksmith shop. He's always seen on the first floor, most of the time near the fireplace that's inside.
Is this also after patrons have maybe consumed some daiquiris?
Right, exactly. That's why I think, like, I would not put it past anyone to be like, Phil, go put that sailor outfit on, stand in the corner, and just lurk until people get drunk, okay? I could also see a drunk person thinking that person, like, right, if they saw, like, a ghost or whatever, like, whoever, like, trying to tip this person, like, oh, great job, love that costume.
Love the costume. You're doing a great love job.
It. Great job. You're nailing it. Crushing it. So, on the second floor of Lafitte's blacksmith shop, which when I read this, I was like, there's a second floor?
Who goes there?
So, apparently.
Can you go there? Can you go upstairs?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't think you can go upstairs. I wish there was a separate bathroom upstairs, because bathroom there is one stall and it's the fucking worst. Lafitte's blacksmith shop, if you're listening, we love you.
We love you.
That's just a personal issue with me.
Women's restrooms are always an issue.
Restrooms are always awful.
I mean, in general, not just there.
Anywho, so there's another ghost on the second floor. It's the ghost of a woman, and they think it could have been someone that lived there, and that rumor has it there's a woman who lived there in the 1890s who killed herself up there, like herself upstairs. So even they say they can't find any, like, good sources on that, like, to cite that, but that's, like, what the legend said, and it is entirely possible. I mean, nobody knows. So they say the ghost is a little bit more mysterious. She's only shown herself to people on a handful of occasions. However, she's very talkative, which, hard pass.
Wow.
It says, imagine sitting in one of the rooms upstairs, which I was like, there's multiple rooms upstairs? I blew my mind.
Yeah. This is the first I'm hearing. Yeah.
I know. So then this scenario was a little funny, but I was like, I get it. You're trying to set a scene. But imagine sitting in one of the rooms upstairs by yourself late at night and hearing a woman whisper your name into your ear.
No, thank you.
No. One, I wouldn't be upstairs at Lafitte's blacksmith
at night by yourself. No.
No. And then if I heard my name whispered in any capacity, even by a living person, I'd be like, damn it, Phil. We told you to stay downstairs.
Why is the whisper worse, too? Like, if someone shouted your name, it's one thing. But when someone whispers...
Yeah, I hate it. I hate it. So, yeah. So, apparently, that's what she likes to do. And she just, like, you know, is letting you know she's there. Like, being like, hey, girl, I see you.
Right.
So, then the last one, it says there's, like, the three big ones so the woman on the second floor, Jean Lafitte, and then there's this next one. So there's also apparently something associated with Lafitte's blacksmith shop that is seen a lot by people, which I'm like, do you just not have your glasses on? Is it like, what's happening? But apparently it's phantom red eyes. And there's never a body, never a voice, just eyes staring at you.
Okay.
So they're always seen in the dark corners of Lafitte. I'm thinking it's Phil. It's got to be Phil. It's Phil just after he's done being the sailor. He puts some stuff on his eyes.
He just got.
And as soon as you make eye contact with it, which why would you, the eyes will freeze on you before fading into nothing. So then it goes to say, ghosts do not have red eyes. People have an unfortunate habit of lumping everything paranormal into the category of ghosts. This isn't the case. Red eyes are a phenomenon reserved for demonic hauntings. Love it.
Oh boy.
Yeah. So that is all the breakdown of that. So reading those things, reading the background, and then giving shit a goop, just because I was like, you know, curious about different stuff, I came across some inaccuracies and stuff that makes some of it kind of impossible. So okay. I'm going to start with a little background on our two brothers, the Lafitte brothers, Jean and Pierre Lafitte. So it's a little bit less exciting than apparently that Hugo's upset by that. Can I help you? Lay down, Hugo. Lay down. You're fine. Okay. Anywho, it's a little less exciting than folklore legend kind of situation. Also, they don't seem to be very good people. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. A lot of my info, I just want to cite my sources real quick, came from the National Park Service website, 64 Parishes Magazine, and Britannica.
Okay.
So there you go. But yeah, also fully filled with illegal activities, all the illegal activities. But anywho, so Jean and Pierre Lafitte were half brothers born in France. Pierre around 1770 and Jean 10 years later around 1780, which would make the likelihood of them using Lafitte Blacksmith Shop as a base between 1772 and 1791 impossible.
Right.
Sorry, Lafitte's Blacksmith Shop.
No.
Didn't happen. No. Considering using it in 1772, Pierre would only have been 2 years old and Jean was not born yet.
So there you go.
There you go. Also, I thought this was cool. This is just a side note. Apparently they each spent time in the French colony of Saint-Domingue, anyway, which is now Haiti. So I thought that was cool. I spent time in Haiti. But there's a couple different versions of that. And like how they got to New Orleans and like all of that. Pierre apparently spent time in Florida, which was under Spanish rule at that time. And like went all around like the Gulf Coast before. He settled in. He like lived in New Orleans, then went all around the Gulf Coast. Pierre was doing the most. Okay.
Right.
But either way, they both ended up in New Orleans in 1809, which would also put it outside of the claim from Lafitte's Blacksmith Shop.
Yes.
They each have a couple of different occupations attached to them, but blacksmith is not one of them. So they were not blacksmiths. No. So also Jean spent time at sea, which is why the privateer name is attached to him. So privateer is basically a pirate. They do the same awful things, loot, rape, pillage, all of that kind of shit at sea, but they do it in the name of a country. So right. It's illegal.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Which, okay.
Yeah. They would go and say like, we're going to seize your cargo in the name of France.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then keep it for themselves.
Yeah. So they also think like, so apparently also too, he didn't like spend a whole lot of time at sea though. So like him being called a privateer is like, eh. And it really started when another New Orleans resident referred to him in 1809 as the notorious Captain Lafitte. Which, so
is it kind of like a Dread Pirate Robert situation?
I don't really know what's happening with that, but who knows. So according to 64 parishes, though, that would suggest that he achieved some level of notoriety, related, shipping related.
Sure.
There isn't a whole lot about that, like him ever doing that. There's a couple where he was like on a boat and he did specific like things, but it was more, what I read was more for like him, like the Lafitte brothers' own gain kind of thing. So while in New Orleans, the Lafitte brothers definitely made a name for themselves. They were the only smugglers in the area, which is of note because business started booming after President Thomas Jefferson put the Embargo and Non-Intercourse Acts of 1807 into play, which I thought was a very weird name, but that's what it was called. As well as when the War of 1812 broke out, the British blockades around like the country made the flow of imports even more difficult. So smuggling was like,
yeah, we needed to get our rum somehow, so.
We had to get all of our illegal things somehow. New Orleans has got a drink, man.
Oh, yeah.
So, so business started booming, and they were in the city, like, at the time, and they had different, like, little things, but this is when they moved to Barataria Bay. So they, like, moved their operations, like, outside of the city. Barataria Bay is south of New Orleans. And also, so Barataria Bay, like, set up, he had, like, his own people, I think they said, hundreds of people or whatever,
right,
that were in their employ, they were smuggling, they were doing their thing, all of that. There's more about what they were smuggling later. But Jean Lafitte is also known for being a big part in the Battle of New Orleans. I also read something, I think it was on I had some information from the Preservation Resource Center, and I feel like it was on their website, that basically was like, we could have won it without him. Like, it wasn't like we won the Battle of New Orleans because Jean Lafitte was there. Like, okay, we would have been fine. Which I thought was funny. But, he helped with the Battle of New Orleans between December 1814 and January 1815. So, his setup in Barataria Bay was important to the British because of its like easy access to New Orleans. Like, it was easier to go like through there, get to New Orleans, all of that kind of stuff. So right, the British paid Jean Lafitte $30,000, which,
that's
$30,000 now, which back then was like a buttload of money.
Yeah.
For his allegiance to the crown and passage through Barataria Bay. Instead, he took the money and then warned the Louisiana officials of the plan, of what was happening.
Nice. However,
this poor guy, the one and only time I'll say that, Governor Claiborne, who was the governor at the time, sent the army and the navy to wipe out Jean Lafitte's colony in Barataria Bay, like when he told him this.
Oh, no.
Yeah. He didn't believe him, I guess, or something, and was just like, while we're at it, let's just wipe them all out.
We've been wondering where you've been hiding, and now we know, so.
Right, now we know where you are, so we're gonna come put a pin in that. even after that, Jean Lafitte offered aid to General Andrew Jackson in exchange for his men to get a full pardon. So he helped in order to like have all his men not have like records, basically. Jackson said yes, they fought alongside Jackson's troops at the Battle of New Orleans. And even though the governor wiped out all of like Barataria Bay, they weren't out of business. So he didn't do a very good job because the Lafitte brothers were still in business. And then with their recently received full pardons from the government, they went back to smuggling, surprise, surprise, and actually moved operations to which would eventually become Galveston, Texas.
Okay, yeah.
So they don't, like, Galveston does not say that they, like, established Galveston. Like, they didn't do that because apparently there's also another wipeout of Galveston later. Like, I think the Lafitte's, like, set it on fire or some shit.
Oh, wow.
So the connection, so that's a little background. That's them. That's the Lafitte brothers. So coming back to the location of Lafitte's blacksmith shop, I got a bunch of info from the Preservation Resource Center. They're amazing. I love them. So according to the PRC, there's no like concrete evidence of any connection between the location of the bar and the Lafitte brothers. Also, I want to note, I forgot to mention this earlier. Apparently the Lafitte, like how we spell it now, L-A-F-I-T-T-E, is incorrect. Like, is not how, when they came over from France, Saint-Domingue, like that's not, it was L-A-F-F-I-T-E. So, just something.
I thought that's how I thought it was spelled.
No,
it's wrong.
Now we spell it L-A-F-I-T-T-E.
Oh, okay. I was wrong the whole time.
Well, you're not wrong, essentially. Not wrong. That is how they spell their name. There was also a different spelling where it was only one F and one T. Like, it looked like Pierre had signed something, and it was only one F and one T. So, like, everyone's wrong. But also, same. My last name has, like, had another T and an E on the end of it. Like, I don't know. When people got here, I think, like, the Americans being Americans that were already here were like, that name is too long. We're going to shorten that. And yeah. We're going to change that.
Yeah.
Because we're a bunch of dicks.
Yeah.
So the house or like location, cottage, whatever, does date back to the Spanish colonial period. And the original, like the origin of the cottage itself was built for a carpenter named Bartholomew, I'm going to go with Robert because it's spelled Robert, but down here, if you're friend, I'm going to go with Robert.
Yeah.
Who owned the property from 1773 to 1833. So the Robert family owned this place until 1833. So sure, the Lafitte brothers could have been there at some point, but it was a small house. Like, it was just a house. Right. So, the Robert's estate mentions that there was a small house in that location in 1781. So that's even, like, that's in the middle of when the current Lafitte people claim the Lafitte brothers were even there. So, right. Yeah. There is, though, a city license that was issued to Pierre Lafitte to operate a butchery on the corner of Bourbon and St. Philip Street, which is also like the same intersection. So, but the PRC says it's a strong case that the license refers to an earlier building located at 1031 Bourbon Street, which is today the Lafitte Guest House.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So they say that Pierre Lafitte's mistress, Marie Viard, purchased the property in August of 1816 from Claude Tremay, and she was most likely a tenant there prior to purchasing the building. So that, like, made her case stronger for her to buy it eventually.
Right.
The PRC says that... Sorry, it just, I love Lafitte's blacksmith shop, and I hated, like, doing this, but I could not leave it. Like, I just couldn't leave it.
Listen, we gotta know the facts.
You gotta know the facts. So the PRC also says the building did not become a bar until the early 20th century. Having first served as a residence, then a workshop, and an ice cream parlor, all at different times. Hey. And this is from PRC. There are many other bars in the U.S. that were established far earlier than Lafitte's blacksmith shop. And I was like, whoop, there it is.
Well, snap.
I was like, PRC don't give a shit. So also the PRC mentioned in like their write-up, they said in an article in the New Orleans Delta, which was the newspaper in 1849, interviewed a friend of Jean Lafitte who said that Lafitte was born in Bordeaux and worked as a blacksmith and kept a little shop from time to time on the levee. So that's not close to where Anyway, by 1883, the legend was in place that when Hearn, referred to 941 Bourbon Street as the famed smithy of the brothers Lafitte, and the 1885 historical sketchbook and guide to New Orleans repeated the claim. So that's where they think it happened. Mm-hmm. So they think, like, basically they're saying that it seems like somebody thought, like, in Bordeaux or back in, like, France or wherever, before it came to New Orleans, that Jean Lafitte, like, did some blacksmith thing. Right. But it's also said, I mean, he did have a, like, they did have, like, a warehouse and shit, like, for all their smuggling stuff. So, like, maybe they had some blacksmith stuff up in there, like.
Who knows, yeah.
They were, you know, rolling with the times kind of thing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so the PRC thinks that, like, somebody just mentioning it is, like, that's what kind of started the whole, like, blacksmith shop situation.
Sure. It's a good story.
So, I wouldn't be me without ending it with a little, you know, kind of like a, hi, Jean Lafitte and Pierre Lafitte were kind of dicks kind of thing. So, they were smugglers. We know this. They were privateers, and we'll get to that, like, later in the thing. But 64 Parishes and the Advocate, the Advocate's story actually came out this year, like, earlier this year during the summer. And it was a guest column by David Head, published on June 27th, 2020. So, it's like a really cool, like, it's not a cool is not the right word, but it's a good write-up basically about how, if we're gonna do this, like, take down all of the, like, bad people's names and statues and all of that, that we also need to add Jean Lafitte to that list.
Wow.
So I thought that was interesting. So I looked more into it.
Yeah.
So he reportedly imported slaves. That was his biggest smuggling.
Oh no.
Section. Yeah.
Oh no.
So he smuggled slaves. That's where this is going to sound horrible, but that's where the money was. I mean, that was where. So
that sucks.
And there's a little bit more to that. So, he imported slaves that had been captured by illicit Spanish privateers. So Spanish privateers, smuggling them into the Louisiana through Barataria and other isolated spots on the coast. So 64, this is a lot from 64 Parishes too. But it says, rather than operating his own vessel, Jean Lafitte may have been working as a middleman between privateers and his brother Pierre, who marketed the captives in and around in and around New Orleans. So basically, even though he was at sea at a couple of different times, like, he wasn't really, like, a full privateer kind of thing, they think he had that name because he worked with a bunch of privateers that were smuggling slaves into the country. He was, like, the businessman, like, you know, adding them up, and then Pierre would take them and go sell them, essentially.
Oh, that's awful.
And so the Lafitte brothers apparently had a very long history with slave trade. It started with Pierre, who at one time lived in what was Spanish Pensacola. In 1805 to 1806, Pierre sold 11 people he had bought while he was in what is now Baton Rouge, like, in that area. At the time, Baton Rouge was located in Spanish West Florida.
This whole territory, yeah.
Yeah, had no idea. I think I did, but I think it was, like, in a file folder way back in my brain. And foreign slave trade was illegal in the U.S. territories at this time, which is why, as a smuggler, they were highly sought after, because they needed to get, you know, they needed to get the people into the country, and it was illegal in the territories at the time.
That is horrible.
The foreign slave trade, not slavery. Slavery was still legal, but they had mentioned, I believe, I don't know if it was in the Advocate or Super Parishes, but they had mentioned that as the cotton industry and, like, sugarcane and, like, all of that in the South got larger, it was harder. Oh, poor slave owners. It was harder because like the American slaves were not reproducing at their preferred rate. So they needed to smuggle in slaves from other places. So disgusting. Like it hurts my body to like
eat all of it. Ooh, yeah. Awful. Yeah.
Technically like this was, they were going like across the border, even though it was still in the US because at the time Spain owned that part, and Spanish subjects could lawfully import people from Africa.
Oh my God.
Story, bro. Hate you.
Oh God.
Yeah. Oh. So the slave smuggling side of the business expanded when Jean Lafitte arrived in New Orleans and got involved in the business. So then when there was two of them, sky's the limit, fucking assholes. Between 1809 and 1814, it is claimed that the Lafitte brothers sold around 550 people, brought to them by other privateers.
No. Ew. God.
Yeah. Yep. Hate it. And it also mentions, like, a little after they left Galveston in 1820, they captured a ship in Havana with 200 enslaved people on board. And then they sold them.
That is...
because they suck.
Really?
We don't. And I, like, wanted to put, like, this part in because... we hear he was like a smuggler and a privateer, but it's like made to be like cool and mysterious kind of sounding. And I think it's really important that it's noted, you know, when people do something wrong, you know, and at the time he was probably just trying to make a buck, and, you know, it's not noted that he had any slaves particularly or that whatever. So it's like, yeah, I get you're a businessman and I get like that's the time or whatever. But I think as we're going through like what our country is going through right now, it is important to highlight that kind of stuff. And I know, so I put in here too, like I went to the University of New Orleans and the mascot is the privateers and like legal pirates. Our mascot up until 2017 was Lafitte the Instigator, which was an alligator named after Jean Lafitte. It actually was a really, really cute alligator. When I was an orientation leader, my friend used to put the outfit on. Well, first my friend Fred did it and it was hysterical. And then Gabby did it and she got real into it and it was adorable. And it was this cute, it was really a cute alligator. I'm like, couldn't we just rename him? Like he was so cute. He had like the big old mouth and everything, and he was just like white.
Owl-gator.
I know. I'm like, couldn't we have just changed that? But instead, they just changed him to like a regular private, like pirate looking man. It's actually kind of scary.
Oh well.
Yeah. So, and then I found a little thing which is like a sidebar, but he was not a privateer for any country, like legal country kind of thing. So his privateering papers said that he received it from the city of Cartagena, which is now present-day Colombia. So there was apparently a civil unrest there. There was like a fight in the country that it was then. And so the city of Cartagena like tried to break free of the country and just be like their own like kind of thing. And so they issued his privateering thing. And the U.S. did not recognize the city of Cartagena as legal. And eventually they charged him and his people with piracy. And that's why he was getting pardoned from Andrew Jackson.
Okay.
Yeah. So that wasn't like there wasn't a whole thing on that. So I just wanted to like sidebar it, kind of mention it. But, and I also, I thought, 64 Parishes is William Davis kind of wrapped it, like, you know, put a bow on it kind of thing. But it says their chief impact on Louisiana's history was as folk heroes. Their legend quickly overwhelming the reality of their lives and growing out of all proportion to the men themselves. In the case of the younger brother, the legend endures among institutional namesakes, the village of Jean Lafitte and the unincorporated Lafitte community in Jefferson Parish, as well as Jean Lafitte National Historic Park and Preserve, which encompass 6 acres across, you know, there it's a bunch of miles. So yeah. Basically, like saying his legend became bigger than what he actually was. And I right. found that really interesting because he's like this mysterious like thing that you hear about and you hear this like all this folklore and you go to like Lafitte's blacksmith shop and hear like the ghost stories and like all of that kind of stuff. And you think like, oh wow, this guy was like, you know, the dangerous yeah. guy, like, but, you know, like, cool. That's the thing. Yeah,
breaking
like,
rules.
Exactly, like, yeah, and instead you find out, like, they really were just pirates, because it wasn't legal what they were doing.
Yeah.
Honestly, even privateers, it shouldn't be legal what they're doing anyway. They're just doing it in the name of a country, and it's real, that also chapped my ass while I was reading all that, too, because even the privateers would, like, rape the women on board, steal everything, burn the ship down, like a bunch of assholes anyway. But but it's like he just wasn't this big, like he was a businessman, a smuggler,
right?
Did illegal activities, right. And he sold people, like human people.
Awful.
And it's, you know, you go to Lafitte's and you're like, oh yeah, he's like haunting here. It's like, no, that's not, that's Phil in a costume, like in the back of the bar, like kind of thing. And it's like that house that, I mean, like the structure is an actual, like has a history, has like a whole thing, like yes. has like that whole, so it's like still cool. Like the building itself still,
oh, yeah.
you know, survived the 2 great fires. It like, you know, went through when, you know, the war of 1812 like broke out. Like we still yeah. survived like all that kind of stuff. It's still a cool building. It's yeah. just does not have anything to do with
John Lafitte. Yeah. I would totally still recommend people go because the
100%. Just a cool love
building.
It.
The love people it. There are generally really great.
Oh, they're awesome. Yeah. 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 And still, like I've sat at the bar before and just like yeah. shoot the shit with the bartenders, like so
they have cool. the windows open, you
yeah.
know.
Yeah, like the shutter thing, the windows and all yeah. that, like shutters out and open and stuff. It's really, really cool. It's still an old building. Yes. I'll give you it might have red eyes. It may even have a man in a sailor uniform there. It's just not John Lafitte.
It could be a woman upstairs walking around whispering to people.
Creepy as fuck, but it could happen. You want your name whispered? Go ask if you can go upstairs.
Upstairs.
Yeah. Ghost stories, full on. There it is. Boom. I'm sure it's great. Whatever. Just has absolutely nothing to do with Jean Lafitte.
Wow. Fascinating.
And it's even, so like, he came up in the Madame LaLaurie part because she bought slaves from like a slave auction that they were at. Now I'm thinking that they probably were just there because they made it seem like it was outside of the blacksmith shop. Like it was there. It was like, whatever. So what I'm thinking is they probably did like offer services into that situation, but it wasn't like their setup and they just went to get the money that they wanted from selling people. So like she may have bought slaves from them, but like it wasn't like he set up a slave trade every week or right. whatever, like
right. kind of thing, yeah.
at that location. Like right. that was not, it presumably was just someone's house for right. a long time right. until it like became a couple other things. Now they definitely could have, because Pierre's name is on the stuff for what is now Lafitte's guest house. Definitely shit could have gone down there. That was his.
Okay. He was hanging out around there for sure.
Totally. Yeah. Totally. But like the Robears, who were their neighbors, probably weren't great, like probably weren't super excited
no.
that they were there. So,
no.
So I can't imagine that they're great neighbors.
No.
I can't. I can't, you know, really wrap my head around that one. But yeah, so ghost story is probably true. Just, it's not John Levitt. You know, so the woman's probably upstairs. You know, I still get creeped out in that place. I do think that there are spirits and
yeah, it is wrong there. It's got a vibe for
it's
sure.
Definitely got a vibe. It's definitely like New Orleans. Like it's true New Orleans. Yes. It's just not Lafitte's place, and it's not the oldest operating bar in the country.
There you go.
Sorry,
but still old.
It's still old. It's still cool. It still will get you drunk. And then maybe you will see red eyes.
You might.
You never know. I just couldn't tell those stories without telling the historical facts after it.
Well, and I like what you said that, you know, the myth growing beyond the man. I think that is very fascinating. Yeah.
And I definitely like bought in that he was like that person and stuff. And it's like, I kind of got like, I forgot who wrote the PRC, like right after whatever, but I feel it, the tone of the writing was kind of like, we get this a lot and those guys suck. So, like,
right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of the vibe I got from the write-up from the PRC is that like people ask about him a lot and they're like, no, they didn't. It's not like, no. But you know, I mean, they were still men. They still lived here. They still probably fucked some shit up.
Oh yeah.
In the city, and they sold people, which sucks.
Well, I'm happy that you pulled the curtain back.
Yep. Pulled the veil back.
We need to know these things.
You know, if you want to think that he's this big pirate guy, sure, go ahead. Go ahead. Yeah. But he was probably a pencil pusher that sold people. A more accurate description. And there's a lot more. I'm not saying that this is like all of the information about these people. I know that there are a lot of people that spend a lot of time researching this, but this is just like kind of a brief overview of like the real men and what I found when I was trying to kind of find the background on Lafitte's blacksmith shop. Because I knew that there were ghost stories, I knew all of that. And so I wanted to kind of look into the history of the building. What was it? Why was it there? What was it really like, that kind of stuff, and got a surprise and found out some different things. So we're still, you know, it's still spirits. We're still Big Easy spirits. You know, we're just adding a little historical accuracies on top, sprinkling it on top. It's like the olive in your martini.
Yes, exactly. Well, and it's interesting if you read the history, quote unquote, of a lot of these places, the old Absinthe House, mm-hmm. you know, John Lafitte's blacksmith shop, they all have John Lafitte's ghost hanging out. I mean, he's everywhere. I mean, he gets around.
He got around. He was involved. Honestly, I'm like, sure. I'm sure he was everywhere.
He's just bar hopping now. It's just
his ghost is on the ghost tour bar hop. Like, right. He goes along with you
on the tour. He's like, oh, guys, look, it's 9 o'clock. I got to go.
Got to get to the next one.
I got to go.
We're on a schedule. Can't break the schedule, man. That's hysterical. Yeah, he's like your ghost guide.
Yeah.
On the bar hop tour. Yeah. Really?
Yep.
I mean, I'm sure he's around somewhere. I also read that he was buried at sea. There's a lot of different stuff about that. He was on a boat and then got sick and then was buried at sea, apparently. There's also a report that, like, actual pirates got to his boat. I don't know, but apparently he's buried at sea. There's also, and I didn't look really into this, but I thought it was hysterical. I read somewhere that there was a rumor that Napoleon Bonaparte was his half-brother, and Napoleon escaped, didn't die in Paris or in France, and is actually buried here. I thought that was hysterical. And at the end of it, it might have been 64 parishes or something. At the end of it, they were like, we're pretty sure he's buried in France. It was hysterical. But I mean, you know, it's like what people need for entertainment, whatever, you know.
That's part of New Orleans, that we love stories. We love
a good story.
We just, yeah.
Sometimes I like say things, like I will repeat something and I'm like, I sit and think about it and I'm like, how did I know that? Who told me that? Like, I'm repeating this as fact and I have no idea where it came from, who said it. Yeah. Like, not a clue.
It's all good.
It's all relative, man. But okay. Yeah, so the legend of the man kind of, you know, got bigger than him. And but also it's like, good on him, because if he got his reputation to last hundreds of years,
right?
And he didn't really even do that much.
Do anything.
Good on him.
Yeah.
That's great. But yeah. Yeah. That's it. We still say it's worth going to Lafitte's Blacksmith Shop. It's cool. Yes, far. Got some good friends, good people.
Yes.
It's on the not gross touristy side of Bourbon.
Yes.
A lot of tourists do go to Lafitte's Blacksmith Shop because it is where you gotta go. Yep. And it does feel haunted and it does feel creepy. It's
very dark.
So it may not be Jean Lafitte, but there is somebody up in there. There's some spirits up in there, man. You know. So go get a drink. Maybe have that woman scream your name, whisper your name in your ear. Call it a day, man.
Yeah.
A day. Nope. But that's it. That's the story of Jean Lafitte.
Fascinating.
Starts out as Lafitte's Blacksmith Shop. Oh, boy.
I learned a lot.
I know.
Thanks.
Well, there you go. So, I also want to say, like, thanks to any new listeners. We were shared on the Ain't There No More Facebook group, and I know we got a couple of new listeners, so shout out to y'all. Mm-hmm. Email us. Let us know what you think. If you have a story you want us to cover, want me to look into, or any fun stuff like witch bottles and all of that, then Ashley can look into. Let us know. You can email us at bigeasyspirits@gmail.com. Find us at bigeasyspiritspodcast.com, where you can also put in a little contact thing that gets sent to us. Or find us on social media at Big Easy Spirits on Facebook and Instagram. And until then, cheers.
Cheers.